Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, this is Molly and Matt, and we're the hosts of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult, a podcast from Ruby Studio and iHeart Podcasts.
It's a show dedicated to helping you figure out the trickiest parts of adulting.
Like how to start planning for retirement, creating a healthy skincare routine, understanding when and how much to tip someone, and so much more.
Let's learn about all of it and then some. Listen to Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Grown Up Stuff. Grown Up
Stuff. As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gremling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, as you know, we are right in the middle of election season here, so I want to start off by throwing it to senior political correspondent Jenny Prentice for the latest on the race to be the 2021 Las Vegas Raiders head coach. Jenny, what do you have?
Yes, thank you so much, Gary. This was a tight race, right down to the wire. There was one candidate who was far behind the other two, but really was neck and neck between the top choices. So we had a three-way race between John Gruden, Connor Orr, and Henry Winkler. In third place, John Gruden came in with only 21.2% of the votes. Connor Orr and Henry Winkler were neck and neck. Who was in the lead kept shifting as more votes came in. But with all precincts reporting, Henry Winkler takes it with 39.7% of the vote, and Connor Orr narrowly behind him with 39.1. Connor, your thoughts on the tight defeat?
Well, if people would stop digging around in my emails. No, I'm just kidding. I would say I'm very proud to have got lost to someone with the gravitas of Henry Winkler, who we all know played a very successful college football coach in the Adam Sandler movie The Waterboy, in addition to his long and storied career as Arthur Fonzarelli on Happy Days. So if I was going to lose to someone, I would like to lose to a legend. And I would just say, too, that it proves my point that even Raiders fans don't want John Gruden to be their head coach, outside of like one or two people who... I've just started retweeting these people, and I just let them. I give them the air to breathe the insanity that they think is reality, and you know, and I just allow them to espouse this because I think they're going to look more and more ridiculous as time goes on. But I think those people are becoming fewer and far between. There's like one guy left that bothers me on Twitter that's like, "You'll see any day now," and it's like, "Yeah, it's been 3 years," you know. So, you know, that's a long time. So we'll see what happens there. But it's good. The proof is in the pudding. This is essentially the equivalent of like John. It would be like a Democrat in a Green Party candidate like trouncing the Republican. You know what I mean? Like this was a really powerful person that finished like way behind in the polls. This is like what was the what Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party year, maybe, or something like that. So very exciting.
Well, in honor of the great Henry Winkler, I think we can safely say that the poll results show that a vast majority of Raiders fans think that John Gruden's career has jumped the shark.
Ooh, that is nice. That is nice. Very good. Poetic.
Solid.
Thank you.
I'm throwing out all my one-liners because I can't top that at this point. But we are actually, and you can go back and listen to the entire AFC West preview. It's just, we just yelled about John Gruden a lot. That's kind of what the show was for the most part. And look, it was an informed electorate that that participated in this election. So good on them. We are on to the NFC South this week. Once again, we'll put the call out. If you think you know the order in which we are doing these divisions, please send your guests. You can email it to the mmqb@gmail.com. Our Twitter handles are, if you can't find us on Twitter, our Twitter handles are in the episode description. You can just check it out there. The hint that I think we want to give this week, and you guys can correct me if I get the wording slightly wrong on this quote here, but SI's executive producer of podcast, Scott Brody, when we revealed the order to him today during our pre-production meeting, I believe his quote was, "Oh, so that has a practical purpose." Something like that. So it practical. Practical is what stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we need to tell the listeners that our order is more practical than whimsical or imaginative. So they're right in that it's subjective order. So a lot of you have written with great suggestions, rather, about the order of cities in which we like to visit or food in each division. And those are all good in the sense that it could be a somewhat arbitrary order and different people might rank them differently. But there is a practical purpose. There is a reason that we've gone in this order that makes it easier for us and hopefully better content for you. And the other thing that I'll say is I tried to drop a hint in last week's episode and apparently it didn't land very well. But if you're so inclined, you could re-listen to the entire AFC West podcast to search for the hint that I dropped.
All right. I also didn't know that there was an order. I thought we were just messing with everybody. And so when we had our pre-show meeting, I was like, oh, wait, there's actually a reason behind this? And Gary's like, yeah, weren't you paying attention? And I was like, no.
That is a true story of our interactions. Yes. Connor couldn't figure out the answer either. So, on the line here is Jenny's packet of MMQB stickers, which you can use as you see fit. Connor's business card. So we were up to the fight lawyer. We are up to the guy who installed your windows. And I believe the one last week, you'll just meet someone somewhere in Indianapolis and hang out with them. Maybe just an open field somewhere in Indiana.
Yeah, we're gonna get bottle service at an elite nightclub where a bartender may or may not steal your credit card.
It depends if you believe the Yelp reviews. But it is time for the NFC South, and we are starting, as we always do, with the biggest offseason addition among the veterans. And this was a little bit tough. I think you guys probably have the same issue. There were no sort of monster additions going into this division this year. It was a tough one to settle on. So since it was difficult, Jenny, why don't you start?
Yeah, so I cheated a little bit. I took addition to mean players coming back who had the potential to leave and just basically the entire Bucks roster. Not the entire roster, but they brought back a lot of free agents. They have all 22 Super Bowl starters back in the fold, notably Shaquille Barrett. They tagged Chris Godwin, Lavonte David, who's the heart and soul of the defense, Sue. So their offseason was all about keeping the team that won a Super Bowl last year. So I'm counting that as acquisitions, because heading into free agency, we weren't sure that they were going to keep all of those players. Fournette was another one that, you know, it seemed like he might be going elsewhere for a time, but they managed to keep the roster together. Obviously, we're seeing the pull of Tom Brady that once existed for the Patriots. Now it exists for the Bucks. Guys recognize that this is a championship window. They won one last year. They feel like the same group can win one again, and they would rather be back in Tampa Bay for that chance than to go anywhere else. So if you count that as an addition, I put in the Google Doc, does this count? Not sure. But, you know, hey, I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to allow it, but watch yourself, Gary. Counselor.
Thank you.
Connor, why don't you go ahead?
I mean, you could make an argument that beyond the Bucks bringing all their players back, like the one of the biggest offseason additions in the entire conference was like AJ Bouye, you know, and really that's nothing to write home about. And I considered actually putting him on that list for Carolina just to kind of diversify. But you and I had the same player. We had Hassan Reddick. And I think that the reason that's significant is he really did kind of come into his own as a pass rusher at the end of his time with the Cardinals and put in a lot of that stuff on tape. And so when you're in a division with a lot of older stationary quarterbacks, like I do think that a pass rush matters, especially if you pair him with Brian Burns, you can get him after the quarterback, you know, and so you've Matt Ryan, you've Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston, Tom Brady, like fast players off the edge matter. And so I think that Hassan Reddick gives you something that you didn't previously have there.
Yeah, I really like how they built this Panthers defense here at this point. I think there's something to be said for, and you see it in Tampa right now, where you have Vita Vea and you have Ndamukong Suh in the middle of that line. I think there's something to be said for when you get those guys who can kind of just engulf an entire offensive line in the run game, and it allows your edge guys to just play a little bit freer, play a little bit more aggressively, get upfield a little bit faster, and not have to worry about maybe their run responsibilities as much as they normally would. So I picked Reddick too. We'll see if he builds off that monster second half. Obviously, look, a lot of those numbers came in that game where Daniel Jones was playing on one leg, and Reddick ended up racking up those 5 sacks. But even beyond that, he was very effective late in the season there in Arizona, and you wonder if he's just sort of scratching the surface and going on there. But if you guys don't mind, I do want to use this as an opportunity to transition to our second category, which is a biggest offseason addition among the rookies. And I do want to highlight two guys in Carolina here. I want to start with J.C. Horn because, look, as far as that front four goes, and you know, like I said, in Reddick, you have a guy who can get upfield. Brian Burns might be an absolute star this season. I mean, he's on the verge of being something really special here. So you have this incredible pass rush here in Carolina. J.C. Horn's really interesting to me in the secondary, just as a guy who, look, if you just look at his box score stats, you would probably not identify him as a big ball skills guy, but he is a guy who makes plays on the ball. I mean, he can turn the ball over, and adding him to the secondary, and they took him 8th overall when a lot of people thought they might go quarterback here. They might, you know, they might go offense for the first time in the history of this regime, in the draft of this Matt Rhule regime. But they end up going J.C. Horn. So really interesting fit behind a team that might be really good in the pass rush, and they need guys who will be able to make plays in the secondary here. I also wanted to highlight Tommy Tremble real quick because I think he's just a tremendous, tremendous talent at tight end. And since I'm already on the record a couple shows ago as saying that the Washington football team is the new version of last year's Tampa Bay Buccaneers, even though I picked them 2nd in the NFC East, I will just layer on the insanity. Tommy Tremble has some George Kittle in him, I think. He's a guy who is just, I think he was underutilized at Notre Dame in the passing game. He's a little bit raw, but I do think he's going to help you out as a blocker. And I think he's a guy who, when you start getting the ball in his hands, he's going to make plays here. So essentially they landed J.C. Horn. They also landed the guy who is just a clone of the best tight end in football right now.
Just on that, on a related note with the Panthers, I recently went back and I watched their All Access draft video that they put out, mm-hmm. where they, I think, kind of accidentally revealed that the Vikings were trying to trade up to get Justin Fields, which I'm sure that the Vikings were thrilled about when that video came out. But when they were drafting J.C. Horn, I liked that even J.C. Horn he's like, no, they're not taking me. And then, like, in the Panthers war room, there was all this complete chaos, and David Tepper was, like, yelling at the general manager, and he was just like, tell them to stop calling with bad trade offers. And he just kept going, no negative points, no negative points, no negative points. And then I was like, how stressful and aggravating must that entire process have been? Like, I would have probably ended up picking a player that I didn't want just to get him to shut up. You know what I'd be like? I mean, I don't know. JC Horn, there you go. Just stop yelling at me. You know, I can't like imagine trying to like record a podcast with like Shelby going, no negative points, no negative points, you know? But so I don't know. I'm just saying that maybe my theory that they maybe didn't mean to draft JC Horn. They just wanted to shut up their owner might be true. I don't know.
I guess we have to watch that now.
Yeah. Wow. I have to say, the other day, my mom was asking me how the podcast was going. And I said, well, you know, Gary and Connor come out with a lot of hot takes and I just can't seem to keep up. So your latest one, comparing a rookie to George Kittle, yet another hot take, but I'm here for it. And I'm yet again not going to keep up because my pick for biggest offseason addition for rookie is Kyle Pitts. But I really think, you know, he was a highly coveted player, obviously drafted much higher than we generally see tight ends going for a reason because he can do so many different things on the field. But I think for Arthur Smith in particular, who used a ton of 12 personnel in Tennessee and can be expected to do so in Atlanta as well with both Pitts and Hayden Hurst, and also all of the other things that Pitts can do as a receiver and just the versatile skill set that he has that really transcends what you think of as a tight end and thus why he was drafted number four. The Falcons are in a really interesting spot. They elected not to do a total teardown, not to draft a quarterback at four and to stay the course with Matt Ryan. And so it's hard to know exactly what to expect from Atlanta this year. But you know, I am interested to see what the offense looks like with Arthur Smith and what he does with Matt Ryan. And I think a big part of that will be the 12 personnel packages and adding a weapon like Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be such an exciting player because you're going to be able to move him around so much. And what Gary likes to say, and I think is a valid point as well, is that everybody says that Kyle Pitts wasn't a great blocker coming out, but that's because he wasn't asked to do a whole lot of blocking. And I think, you know, if he can refine that part of his game and become that ideal multifaceted tight end, to Jenny's point, that takes what Arthur Smith has had in Tennessee and puts it in a dimension that we really haven't seen before. I mean, Jonnu Smith and Anthony Firkser are a great combination, but Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts, if both of them can, you know, help them marry the run and pass game together, that's an exceptional asset to your offense.
I could absolutely see Kyle Pitts being the second best rookie tight end in this division here after the new George Kittle. So.
That's right. That's right.
Getting Gary's Tommy Tremble jersey.
Connor, who do you have?
I have Ian Book. Woo! Because...
All right.
Here's
the quarterback.
Why. Yeah, yeah. Was I not allowed to pick a quarterback?
No, I guess you can pick a quarterback.
Yeah.
Because some of them said, don't pick a quarterback. And then I was like, well, Connor, read the directions. And I think I did, right? Hold on.
No. You're fine. You're fine.
Okay, good.
You're good. I was more like the quarterback, Ian Book, as if, is there another Ian Book that plays another position?
No. Just Ian Book, the quarterback. Yeah.
You go. That's a deep cut right there. I mean, that's Noah Gray deep.
I think if you're Sean Payton, it allows you to F with teams during the week. Like if he develops into anything any semblance of a passer that can take NFL snaps, I think it really helps you in terms of gamesmanship because I think it was NFL Network that reported at the time of the drafting him, you know, they're going to make all three of these guys active on game day, right? And so now you're going to have to wonder, like, okay, is Taysom Hill not playing quarterback this week? Is he playing tight end? And what does Ian Book active mean? You know, and does that mean Jameis Winston starting and he's going to back him up? But from a practical standpoint, you know, Sean Payton has taken and swung and missed on a lot of mid-round quarterbacks during his time in New Orleans, so I'm not saying that this one's different by any stretch of the imagination, but I will say that there was a sort of a building of excited scout chatter about Book late in the process. Like, I think he was a guy that if you talk to people during the Senior Bowl, before the Senior Bowl, he was an undrafted seventh rounder, and afterwards kind of developed into that fourth round guy. If you're in Sean Payton's offense, So much of it is the processing ability, which Ian Book has, you know, a little bit less of the arm talent, but that was always Drew Brees too. I mean, Drew Brees was not a guy that blew you away with his physical tools, and Ian Book can also move a little bit and can run. So I don't know, maybe he gives his quarterback competition a little bit of run for its money in the spring and in the summer, but then when it comes to the fall, he just helps Peyton kind of mess with everybody a little bit, you know?
So what I'm hearing is Tommy Trumbull is George Kittle and Ian Book is Drew Brees.
Incredible mid-round finds in the NFC South.
How did Notre Dame not win the national championship last year? Didn't they lose to Clemson by 48?
I'm just translating, distilling down the message. Hopefully I've gotten everything right and I've, you know, captured all the nuance that you've presented in your takes. So
it is take week on the MMQB.
Every week is
here.
Take week.
And Kyle Pitts is pretty good too. Most valuable non-quarterback in the division. We will start with Connor.
I just have Christian McCaffrey because you saw how significantly that offense fell apart last year without him. And I think that becomes even more so this year because I think that Sam Darnold is a downgrade from Teddy Bridgewater. I really, truly think that Teddy Bridgewater is a better quarterback. I don't think Sam Darnold's going to have a good season. And I think he's going to need somebody to check the ball down to. Like, I think that in other drafts, he would have been a third round pick. And I think that he's a guy that needs help dumping the football down. Christian McCaffrey is the ultimate outlet back. And I think that he's going to keep drives alive by virtue of simply being Christian McCaffrey. And so more so than maybe any of the other star offensive players in that division, those quarterbacks don't need as much help as Sam Darnold, I think, is going to need. And so while you never want to be that beholden to a running back, Carolina finds itself in that position.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm with you on that Sam Darnold take, and I would never say never with him. He is a physical talent, but if you were doing the slider, that's my imaginary slider. If you're watching on YouTube instead of just listening to the podcast, I think it's like an 18% chance he becomes a quality starter at this point. I just think I think they're ready to move on to something else, and they just needed a placeholder. And I think they would have been better off with Teddy Bridgewater, but that ship has sailed. I understand why they're rolling the dice.
You're hearkening back with our political theme to the needles on election night, Gary, and where things are falling there. But I agree on Darnold. I think it's totally possible to both think that he didn't have an entirely fair shake in New York, or certainly didn't have the best circumstances to develop, but then also not to think that he will be some transcendent quarterback in Carolina, or that even that he would be better than Bridgewater. I think both of those things are true. So I would agree with that. And in a similar spirit to your answer, Connor, I'm going with Alvin Kamara. I think he's the hardest running back to defend in the league. And this year in particular, with the transition away from Drew Brees, I think his role will be even more important if that's possible. He had nearly 1,700 all-purpose yards last year, but hey, I think he could threaten 2,000 all-purpose yards this year. Is that a hot take? Maybe not. Probably not. That's about as hot of a take as I will give. But yes, Alvin Kamara is my answer.
I was going to say, if you're going to keep up, you got to go like 6,000 yards season.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I'm willing to go higher than 2,000. So this is why I'm bad at the take thing.
The heat of your takes, though, is very responsible. Like, it is like, you know, when you go to a place where, you know, you get tea from a buffet, right? There is the urn that like blasts it with scalding hot water and then you can't drink the tea. Or there's the places with just the water that's just hot enough to release the ingredients from the tea bag and make it an enjoyable experience. That is the heat of your takes, which are useful and I think more palatable, whereas Gary and I just really burn you with undigestible hot water. You know, that's sort
of permanent damage to the roof of your mouth with me and Connor. You get that's how do we brand that? Takes hot enough to steep your tea in. Those are Jenny Brent's takes.
Wow. I can see this is why we need like a merchandising arm, like a Lipton bag with like
yes.
Jenny's face on it, and like, you know, and on the cup it says like, you know, I don't know. Let's
think
about
this person.
I think we all are. And there's a Bigelow factory near me. I can knock on the door later today and see if they're up for it.
Great. Thanks, Gary. I really appreciate you looking out for me, helping me score really additional opportunities for my burgeoning brand. This is wonderful.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everyone, this is Molly and Matt, and we're the hosts of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult, a podcast from Ruby Studio and iHeart Podcasts.
It's a show dedicated to helping you figure out the trickiest parts of adulting.
Like how to start planning for retirement, creating a healthy skincare routine, understanding when and how much to tip someone, and so much more.
We're back with season 2 of the podcast, which means more opportunities to glow up and become a more responsible and better adult, one life lesson at a time.
And let me just tell you, this show is just as much for us as it is for you. So let's figure this stuff out together. This season, we're going to talk about whether or not we're financially and emotionally ready for dog ownership.
We're going to figure out the benefits of a high-yield savings account.
And what exactly are the duties of being a member of the wedding party?
All that plus so much more.
Let's learn about all of it and then some. Listen to Grown Up Stuff How to Adult on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Grown Up Stuff.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English, and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Oh, I am staying in New Orleans here with my pick, Teron Armstead. And look, durability is always a question with him, and will he make it through the entire season? There are a couple of things with him. Number one, you're probably going to have to get a little more creative with this offense if you're Sean Payton. A guy like Armstead is not only a crucial left tackle pass protector here, but he's so effective in the screen game. You can do different things in the run game when you have a guy that athletic at a tackle spot. And it just is, you can do a lot more things here. You have more options. You can be more expansive with some of your run game / screen game stuff. But, we touched on this a little bit last week, left tackle versus right tackle, and how that, it's just not really as big a difference at this point. I mean, we had the Michael Orr era where it was, you got to protect the blind side. Blind side's the most important thing. And you saw across the league over the last, 5 to 7 years, a lot of defenses were realizing, well, you know, if we rush off that right side too and are in the quarterback's face, that's almost as good as blasting his ribs from behind because ball comes out so much quicker. Actually disrupting a quarterback where he can see the disruption and maybe gets distracted or maybe has to react to it, even though you don't sack him, that's very valuable as well. But I do think the blind side is especially important in New Orleans when you have two guys, whether it's Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill or Ian Book. We'll see how it goes. Jameis Winston holds on to the ball. Taysom Hill is a guy who is going to try to extend plays. I think that blind side protector just gets a tick more important there. And obviously the Saints are really good on the right side as well with Ryan Ramczyk. But if you are going to emphasize the importance of the left tackle, I think New Orleans with their quarterback situation now is a place where you'd want to do it in, especially as they kind of evolve offensively here.
I think that's a good point, Gary. And I think it goes back to a little bit of a surprise for us. I mean, I just still don't think that we expected to be here. I don't know if you guys expected to be here in a situation where Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill were the options, right? Like, I don't know, like go back to like a year ago when we knew that Drew Brees was walking away and that he was going to go to NBC, and you see all these marriages of high profile quarterbacks changing teams and moving places. And how does Sean Payton get left, you know, at the dance without kind of, a real star here? I don't know. I think that's like surprising to me a little bit, you know?
I mean, it's interesting that there has been so much quarterback movement, or at the least attempted quarterback movement, but there are still a lot of teams that aren't able to find a guy or make that transition successfully. I mean, we saw last year the first year after Brady left wasn't smooth for the Patriots, right? And we're sort of seeing the Saints in a similar position. And perhaps they do have high hopes for Winston and Hill this year, but I don't know that we could feel confident in that, which is why Connor picked Ian Book as the biggest offseason addition rookie.
I think if you're Sean Payton, you just want to see something weird before you leave and take the Cowboys job next year.
Yeah, well, this actually leads well into our next category.
All right, most interesting coach, head, or assistant. And Jenny, you lead us off here.
Yeah, I'll lead us off because it picks up right where Connor stopped. I actually thought Connor would also put Sean Payton down and we'd have a similar situation like last week where I was first up and I talked about John Gruden in, you know, milquetoast terms, and then Connor turned up the heat when it was his opportunity. But yeah, I mean, Sean Payton has never been the head coach of the Saints without Drew Brees. And so I think this is going to be very interesting in the way that Belichick last year was very interesting for the Patriots. How would he handle this situation? And, you know, I think Connor's point is a really good one. And it's a reminder that the transition from a, you know, generational quarterback isn't always the easiest. It's not, you know, it's hard to time up exactly when the quarterback is going to leave, whether it's they want out of their situation like Brady or they retire like Brees. And, you know, Brees, it seemed like he was choreographing that this would be his last season. And we thought that going into it, but still weren't positive until, you know, right before free agency started. So now they're in a situation where it's a big challenge for Peyton. And if he's going to make it work, as you referenced earlier, Gary, he's going to have to get more creative. He's going to have to find different things to do. He doesn't have the quarterback with the, you know, experience and insane processing ability that Drew Brees has, simply because there aren't many of those quarterbacks who have that built up, you know, institutional knowledge of playing for the league as long as Brees had. So what direction do they go in? What does the offense look like? What's kind of the counterpunch for what's expected this year? I think it's a big test of will Peyton stay put and try to make it work with a different quarterback other than Brees? Or, as Connor referenced, will he make the long rumored jump and go to another team like the Dallas Cowboys?
I think he's going to just hot dog it like Nick Saban. Like, did you see how ridiculous that thing was that Nick Saban said last week that when the team doctor said that he couldn't have Drew Brees, he decided to leave and go back to college football as if like he had no power over the team doctor and couldn't overrule him and keep Drew Brees. But, you know, I think that Sean Payton, to me, just strikes me as the kind of person that, and I think this is indicative of all NFL coaches, right? Bruce Arians' book is called The Quarterback Whisperer, but he followed Andrew Luck and Carson Palmer and Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning around. So yeah, sure, you could be the quarterback whisperer when you do that, you know? I could be the podcast whisperer when I'm on the show with Gary Gramling and Jenny Vrentis. It makes me look good every week, and so, you know... Yeah. But I think that's just one of those things, right? And you get to go to Dallas then next year and you get to resurrect Dak Prescott, resurrect in air quotes, because he's already one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and you can take that team in another direction and do whatever you're gonna do there. I think that makes a lot of sense. But you know, it's a weird thing because he has done some pretty incredible things in terms of just winning games with Taysom Hill. Like, I think that's a wild thing in itself. Like, it's a tight end who knows how to throw the football, basically. And he was pretty successful during the year with Teddy Bridgewater when Drew Brees broke his thumb. The year before that, you were winning games. And so I think that in that way, he's been creative, but also, like, there's that aspect of it that's really hard to ignore, right? Like, that he maybe has largely underperformed over the course of, since that first Super Bowl, since the only Super Bowl, right? Like, how do you not have another Super Bowl out of all this? Every team is, you know, capable of winning 13 or 14 games, but something happens along the way that causes you to not make the Super Bowl. And I don't know. Like, I think it's just one of those weird things that sort of adds to, that flavors his legacy a little bit.
Yeah, Connor, I think that's a really good point, because you could look at Bill Belichick and say Belichick has something to prove, that he can win a Super Bowl without Brady. And okay, maybe that's true in a sense, but he also doesn't really have a lot to prove because he's won 6 Super Bowls as a head coach, right? So Sean Payton has won 1 Super Bowl. So there is more to prove there. And it doesn't just have to do with Brees. And so I think that's a really good point. You assess after this season and you say, where is my best opportunity to win a Super Bowl? And this is a reason why there have been these rampant rumors around Payton for a while, maybe that he would leave and go somewhere else, and maybe, you know, a team that he saw as having a better chance, or whatever the case may be. I think he definitely is out to prove certain things, more so than a Belichick.
It is interesting, right? Because if you fancy yourself as a top of the line head coach, which I'm sure he does, there really is no excuse to be as far away from Belichick as he is, right? Like, you know, other coaches can say, you know, maybe Andy Reid or anybody that's kind of Pete Carroll, anybody hovering in that stratosphere can say, well, I don't have Tom Brady, right? And Tom Brady is this archetype of this all-knowing starter who can make everything around him happen. But the closest thing to that is Drew Brees, right? That's the second guy, right? That's the guy after Tom Brady that you'd probably want to do all of the Tom Brady things. And so you have that. And so, I don't know, and maybe not 6 Super Bowls, but you could have 3 or 2 or more than 1. So I don't know. I think that there's, you know, something to be said there. Just poking the Saints bear a little bit, you know?
All right. Yeah. That's what we're here for, it, Connor. We're here for it.
What if Jameis Winston ends up being good in this system? Let's put it this way. One, do you think Jameis Winston can be good in the system? 2, if no, would you rather go with Taysom Hill here if you're Sean Payton?
On Jameis Winston, I think the problem with him has always been that he just has that like little glitch, right, where he can't help but throw the ball to the other team, and he doesn't see the field the way he needs to see it. And it's really frustrating for anyone who's ever coached him, because you think he can do it and you think he can, you know, do everything you need your quarterback to do in a system. And he has all this talent and it should be able to work. But he just has this glitch where he can't make it work. Now, maybe Peyton can find a way to reset this glitch. But when he left Tampa Bay, I think that was the conversation. Like, can he ever get over it? We haven't seen evidence that he can get over it. And, you know, then obviously they had the chance to get Brady. And so that made it a no-brainer. But I think anyone who has coached Winston, that's the internal debate. That's the push and pull. And I don't think we could say with confidence that anyone would be able to fix this glitch just because we haven't seen it to this point in time.
I think it would look really weird if you showed up to a dance with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. You know, like I just picture going to prom with like Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. I don't think he's going to succeed in this system necessarily, because it's like Jenny said, it's predicated on making smart decisions with the football, right? And all these plays are drawn up, much like you referenced a few weeks ago, with Jared Goff missing the hit that Sean McVay had been setting up for down after down, right? And then there's this all of a sudden this wide open wide receiver that he doesn't see. That's Sean Payton too, right? I mean, a lot of this stuff is, you know, you're setting someone up, and then you count on Drew Brees to shift focus, see the guy, make the throw. Jameis Winston has never been that guy, and if he was that guy, then Bruce Arians would have resurrected his career. But yeah, Bruce Arians didn't resurrect his career, and so I'm interested to see what happens there. But because Jameis Winston is going from the man who called himself the quarterback whisperer in the book to another man who fancies himself the quarterback whisperer, this is a little bit like quarterback whisperer Hunger Games. And so we may finally see who is like, who really is like the ultimate whisperer, you know? who's the best at whispering? I'm sick, so I can't whisper, but who's the king whisperer?
I wholeheartedly believe that quarterback whisperer is a term that should be banned in the NFL, because yes, too often it is misapplied to people who are coaching wildly talented players who would be successful anywhere, as you referenced earlier. And it also, you know, it just becomes this like myth in hiring, right? And it results in a lot of teams making really bad decisions because you go after some guy who's viewed as a quarterback whisperer without recognizing the fact that you can have a successful quarterback by playing smart football or having an offense that does what your players do well. And that's not necessarily like the fanciest or showiest or glitziest thing. So I would like to hereby ban the use of quarterback whisperer, except in an ironic way.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I think that Mitch and our editor, Mitch Goldich, and Shelby have both prevented me from using certain phrases, halcyon days and tea leaves. And I think that Jenny adding quarterback whisperer to the band lexicon is a very valuable addition to the catalog.
Tea leaves is coming back once we get that Bigelow deal done with Jenny's takes, though. So
that's right. But then it would be me using tea leaves and not Connor.
Okay.
For personal financial gain.
All right. If Connor used it, he has to give you a nickel each time. That's going to get expensive. I think we covered Sean Payton pretty well there. Connor, who is your most interesting coach, head, or assistant in the NFC South?
I think it's Arthur Smith, and here's why. I think that if you look at the coaching hiring process this offseason, everybody kind of wanted a version of the same thing. And what's interesting about that situation is there isn't a lot of people out there to make that thing work. And so if you're Arthur Smith, if you're any of these other guys that are running this offense that are very popular, you're not going to necessarily be able to take all the guys who know how to run it with you. You know, a lot of his assistants stayed back in Tennessee, namely the offensive line coach, who in that offense is probably the most important person that you have. And so now you're trying to run this very difficult offense with an offensive line coach that you've taken from college who isn't necessarily running this offense collegiately. And, you know, you're trying to kind of piecemeal this all together. And, you know, I talked to some kind of experts in this field, and basically, like, this offseason, he's going to have to teach everybody how to teach. And that's something that, as a coach, especially a first-time head coach, you don't really have time to do, and something that you really don't want to be doing. But presumably, he's going to be spending some of this time being like, well, this is how we have to do this, and this is how this has to work, and this is how this has to go. Whereas some of these other teams that are putting all this stuff in already know exactly what they're doing, where everybody's going. Like, you know, there's so many different little aspects to this. Like, there are times historically when this offense hasn't worked because an offensive line coach and a running backs coach will get into a fight about, well, the running back's target point needs to be the back heel of the tight end. No way. The running back's target point needs to be the back heel of the tackle. And an entire team's offenses will break down over this minute detail. And so I think it's going to be interesting when you're trying to run this without your offensive line coach in a new place, how that's going to work. And so I definitely have my eye on that. Now, he has a good offensive line coach, just not the one that he had in Tennessee, and he's got great players, just not the ones he had in Tennessee. And so can you make all this work without the stuff that you had before?
Connor, I think that's a super smart point, because for two reasons. One is that I think a lot of times the assistant coaches, especially offensive line coaches, don't get enough credit for what they do. And how often do we see a team's offense totally go down the tubes when a coveted offensive line coach like Bill Callahan, for instance, leaves the team? I think we really underestimate just how essential it is that you have a good offensive line coach that's coaching smart technique up front, and how much everything follows from that. And the second point of it, too, is how important your staff is. And I think you've laid that out really well. And we've seen a lot of head coaches, and Lynn comes to mind. He didn't really get to hire his whole staff when he went to the Chargers. And I think that restricted his ability to implement the systems and the ways of coaching that he would have liked to do. So I think that's a really important insight and something to keep an eye on this year for sure.
Just a really interesting spot for Arthur Smith. And I guess we'll get to it in the predictions at the end of the show. But, you know, what do we expect of the Falcons? If he goes, you know, Falcons last couple of years, if they went 7-9, that was a disappointment. Is it really a disappointment if they go 7-10 this year or 8-9? I don't know. I'm going with the Bucs offensive guys here. Byron Leftwich, offensive coordinator, and of course, Bruce Arians, who wrote a book in which he described himself as a person who speaks in a very soft voice to quarterbacks. But, oh man, this is going to be my worst take of all. If you go back to last January and you rewatch that Saints-Buccaneers game, I think people kind of lose track of the fact that the Saints had a touchdown lead and the ball at midfield with less than 20 minutes to go in that game. Then they had the Jared Cook fumble. They turned around, they turned over a couple times in the fourth quarter, and that's how it kind of got away from them. But if the Bucs lost that game, what would the narrative this offseason have been with them? Because that offense was really not good. I think they had a couple of really good series in the Super Bowl. I thought the play calling was really good. I thought they figured some things out that maybe they hadn't figured out at all in the regular season or even the playoffs at that point. I don't think they were very good in the Green Bay win in the NFC title game, but the system just never really worked. And, you know, to an extent, they sort of handed it over to Tom Brady a certain amount, and that sort of helped things out there. But I don't know exactly what they're going to look like in 2021 here, because if you sort of hand it over to Tom Brady and be like, okay, this is going to be a New England offense that we're going to run here, and you basically take the reins and we'll sort of follow your lead, I think that works to an extent, but does it work all season long? I don't know. I guess overall, I just think they underachieved on offense for, 18 and a half games, and That's it. That's why I think the Washington football team is basically the equal of the 2020 Bucks. That's the end of my thesis.
Well, I'm curious to hear what Jenny has to say here, because she in the Super Bowl story did a lot of really great reporting on Bruce Arians and Tom Brady actually coming together and deciding what this offense was going to look like. But I talked to some coaches down the stretch who really, I mean, it's not that this offense was spectacular at the end of the season. Like, they were running like duo, these basic running plays, but they had an excellent offensive line. They had a thick, deep core of running backs that could pound the ball. And sometimes, like every 2 or 3 years, there's that weird situation where in November, December, and January, that matters. It's hard for teams to defend down the stretch, and you're still light. As a personnel group, you know, defenses, you're not necessarily equipped to handle all that stuff. And all of a sudden you get Leonard Fournette and Ali Marpet and, you know, all these guys coming at you and mowing you down. And I think that's really what won Tampa Bay a lot of their games down the stretch. It was this conversion to the running game and this, you know, instinctive pivot to go there. Tom Brady, I guess, like, I don't know, PFF is going to yell at all of us and slap us on the wrist for saying it wasn't spectacular. They seem to think it was an incredible season last year, but I just think it was fine, you know, and you know, to the point where, you know, he's the greatest player ever, obviously, but he's sort of been like, you know, he's like football Jeff Bezos now, you know, and it's, you know, this Super Bowl really kind of put him in the space rocket, and it's been uncomfortable. When in all reality, like, it's like, no, this team was just very good. This was a very good team, and you caught some other teams in personnel mismatches down the stretch.
Yeah, this is a really smart choice for this category, Gary, because I do think the second year will be really fascinating. The intention was for 2021 to be the Super Bowl year, is how Bruce Arians put it, because I think he felt like the marriage of their offensive strategies and mindsets would take some time, especially because they were starting it in a pandemic where there wasn't a regular off-season program. And then they had this mid-season phone call, a meeting of the minds. Arians basically told Brady, if you don't like it, we're throwing it out. I think there were just so many things that were different for Brady. Even how he reads his progressions were completely different in New England versus in Tampa Bay. And this, you know, it really is true. The, you know, no risk it, no biscuit Arians offense versus the, you know, stabbing them with death by a thousand paper cuts type offense from New England. And so Arians really did kind of let Brady take the reins towards the end of last season. But so what do they do now that they have an entire offense together or offseason together? What do they do now? How do they build on that? Was that just to get through the end of last season, right? Like, was it, hey, we're in this situation. We can't effectively merge everything right now. So I'm going to defer to you a little bit. Does that carry forward into 2021 because it won them a Super Bowl? Or do we see something different this year? And I think that'll be really fascinating to see.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. And we do get sort of caught up on what we've seen in the past. And that's you know, I mean, look, that's the data we have. That's what we sort of form our opinions on. But it is going to be what they become in the future here. But I don't know. You don't have to go and rewatch the full game. But if you do have a chance, I thought the most, typical play of this Bucs offense in the postseason last year was there was early in the second quarter of the NFC title game. There was a 52-yard pass from Brady to Godwin, and it's like the play didn't work. The play design didn't work. Godwin didn't get open. It just ended up being Brady just chucked the thing up into the middle of the field, downfield, and Godwin is Godwin, and he went and made a play over Darnell Savage, and now you're 50 yards downfield. And there was nothing there's nothing necessarily good about it, except your great players just made a great play to sort of overcome the fact that you were kind of out-schemed on it. But
yeah, and I think that is what was exceptional about last season with the Bucs is that it was great players just willing things to happen, or even like Brady and Gronkowski, the one touchdown in the Super Bowl where they just had that telepathic connection and they just figured out a way to make it work. There was just a lot of that, and that's really hard to recreate. And maybe you can, but I think they've got to come up with some different solutions to be a little bit more sustainably successful throughout the season this year and to avoid some of those growing pains. Not to criticize a Super Bowl season. I'm just saying, looking forward, it will be interesting.
You know what really stinks about this whole thing? Like, if all those things didn't bounce their way, and this is coming from somebody who had an article on Tom Brady's haters montage of headlines at the end of the year, so I understand the position that I'm in, but now he's infallible, right? Like, before, even though he won six Super Bowls, you could say that they were Belichick Super Bowls and that, you know, he's sort of this vegetable wackadoo who we don't have to listen to for anything. And then when he leaves and then wins a Super Bowl at the Buccaneers, regardless of how it goes, it makes him completely infallible. And now we have to listen to him about cryptocurrency and non-fungible tokens and everything. Like, he is just, this uber, Thanos-esque, person in our lives, which is really unfortunate. You know, it was great business for me making fun of him. I once in an article called him an immobile vitamin salesman, and that was a lot of fun for me. And then somebody brought it up after the Super Bowl, and so I can't do that anymore. And so a big part of my life is gone, and I just have to find a way to kind of recreate that somewhere else.
He is all at once the past and the present and the future. It's like a Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen. That's basically Tom Brady at this point.
Yeah.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everyone. This is Molly and Matt, and we're the hosts of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult, a podcast from Ruby Studio and iHeart Podcasts.
It's a show dedicated to helping you figure out the trickiest parts of adulting.
Like how to start planning for retirement, creating a healthy skincare routine, understanding when and how much to tip someone, and so much more.
Here's a clip from an upcoming episode featuring the weekly home checks, Keyshawn Lane, that you won't want to miss.
A common mistake that a lot of people do, they use fabric softener when it's not so great for your clothes.
Should we never be using fabric softener?
No, you should not ever be using fabric softener.
Oh.
It leaves a deposit on our clothes, which is also left in the machine. And it also makes the clothes highly flammable.
Wait, what?
Yes. What you want to do instead is just use a quarter cup of vinegar.
And that'll make them softer?
That'll make them softer. And if you wanted some kind of scent, you can use essential oils.
Wow, wow, wow. Catch new episodes of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult every other Tuesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Grown Up Stuff.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Connor, the good news is Mad Libs are here. It is time
this
for the NFC
time.
Time for the NFC South, Mad Lib. And Connor, again, Connor is playing through injury today. Injury being a cold. But yeah, he's gotten it out. We're proud of him. And now he's going to unleash Mad Libs on us. And this is always the best part of the show. So let's go.
My wife looked it up. It's like, it's called like the summer cold, but it's like, it's this weird thing where our body, like we haven't been sick in 2 years, right? Because of COVID and we've mm-hmm. been wearing masks. And so our body has no idea how to, like, it just freaks out when any of this stuff gets in there now. And so it's this mixture of like kids playing with each other and then coming back home and giving the parents these sicknesses. And it's like this like acid trip of sickness that I've been on for like, you know, like one day you'll just like wake up and, one day you'll just like wake up and it'll be like, oh, I just have a cold, you know, I'm just sneezing. And then like the next day you'll wake up and be like, I'm 110 degrees and I can't stop burning. So, but anyway, I'm ready for the Mad Libs in preparation while we were talking. I also drew a dog, on my sheet. The dog looks very tired. There's like tired eyes and stuff on him. So, obviously just prepared as always to get this done. So, I'm ready to go. I think I had Gary go first Jenny go first last week, correct?
Yeah. I want to say Jenny went first. We did it based on, the Hills. Who knew the Hills
right,
better?
Jenny being able yeah. to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Gary will go, first this week. Yeah. Okay. Gary, give me an animal that you'd usually associate with being old and frail and weak.
I will go with an animal that's old, frail, and weak. Let's go. I want to say one of those like real rickety dogs, but don't go with that. Let's go with a vulture.
Oh, okay.
That's not weak, but it looks it's rickety physically dogs, unattractive.
Rickety dogs would fit so perfectly in here.
Let's do rickety dog then.
Rickety,
yeah, or rickety dog.
Dogs.
Yeah, I can picture exactly what you mean.
Jenny, name a nightshade vegetable.
Tomato.
So those two clues being back to back, and then this third one you could Gary, an animal that you would associate with being very unexciting and boring.
Let's go with a
boring dog.
Pigeon. Okay. I was gonna say. What I'm realizing is I have a very like very limited knowledge of the animal world. I know like three animals.
All right, Jenny. And then an adjective. What do you call someone? And this is the only way that I can describe this kind of person, but I think we're on the same page here. Is just someone who walks around and clearly just enjoys the smell of their own farts. Like that kind of person, you know?
Someone
who's got a really high opinion of themselves and is kind of a turd, you know.
And you want like a noun for who that person is, or essentially.
name the exact person in your life that
a proper noun seems like you're asking me for a proper noun here. So
I feel like my ears are burning right now.
No, like you would call like that person is like a weenie or like a turd or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Doofus probably isn't right, is it?
Doofus is fine.
All right, we'll go with doofus.
Doofus. Perfect. So that concludes the Tom Brady section. No, I'm just kidding. Not really. Okay, so Gary, a sticky, kind of dark-colored dessert that one might describe as gooey when they're eating it.
gooey dessert. Like a s'mores.
S'mores.
Ooh, yeah.
Good choice.
How's that?
Yeah, that makes me really hungry. I love s'mores. Jenny, a fruit beloved by people with no teeth or people with bowel issues?
Wait. Applesauce?
Apples? Okay, applesauce, yeah.
I don't know. These clues are so specific. Oh, was I supposed to say banana? I don't know.
I was thinking prune, but it doesn't have to be prune.
Oh yeah, prune is definitely no bowel issues.
The no teeth threw me off.
That's what threw you off. Got it.
Okay.
Gary, your favorite ridiculously expensive high-tech kitchen appliance?
Oh gosh, I have a least favorite, but my favorite is it's not high tech, but like we make a lot of stuff in the blender. We do the smoothies. Like we have a very nice blender.
What kind of blender do you have?
I don't know. One with blades.
Okay,
a bladed blender. Yeah.
A blender with blades. what's your least favorite high tech? You seem to have a hot take on that.
I feel like I'm going to say it, and then it's going to be like, oh, they're going to come in as advertisers. Now they're at. We have the air fryer, and look, I can see its charms. I know people love the air fryer, but we were like, oh, right, we're going to make like, you know, we're going to throw potatoes in there and end up with French fries and stuff. Like, no, it's just a little convection oven. That's basically it. You can heat stuff up in it, but it's not frying anything. It's not a fryer.
No, yeah, I cannot. Night after night, I will dump frozen tots in there for my daughter, and they just come out slightly less frozen.
have an oven, like that's what we do in there.
Yeah.
Sorry, air fryer people. It's a lot of people like it though.
Sponsorship terminated. okay, Jenny, a peaceful, low risk weather pattern.
Boy,
this is
like a relaxing
a breeze.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think this can possibly live up to the clues when we hear.
I mean, I'm really kicking myself over not saying prune juice, but we'll just have to move on here. So,
could we say a light breeze?
Light breeze, sure.
Gary, your favorite flavor of ice cream.
I do not care for ice cream, but I will say cookies and cream.
Okay.
Good pick.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to do like a green eggs and ham line there. Like you started out and it's just like, I do not like ice cream. Not in a house, not with a mouse.
Breyers people just crossing off our podcast for their ad dollars. Yeah.
Not with Matt Rule, not in a pool.
excellent.
All right. Jenny, a type of large industrial vehicle. Sorry. A barnyard animal. I need a barnyard animal.
Oh, okay. Wow. Really heavy on the animal kingdom here.
Yep.
I will go with a rooster.
Rooster. Perfect. Gary, a large industrial vehicle.
Let's go cement mixer.
Ooh.
Some of these are just dumb, and they're for my own. Like most of this is largely for my entertainment. Jenny, give me your best cat impression, and then I'm going to repurpose that for this.
Okay. Meow.
Perfect. I don't know why I'm writing down meow. I just meow. All right.
But how to do the swats with it, you know. I guess the hiss could have been good.
Yeah. Perfect. Gary, and how do you describe cursive lettering versus regular lettering? Like compared to regular lettering, cursive lettering is
well, fancy. Also disorienting at this point, but I think fancy is what we're going for.
Disorienting would have worked too. Let's see here. Jenny, this is good. This is sort of building off of a running bit here. Give me your best impression of a disappointed Gary.
Oh, okay. I did it so well last week.
I know.
And now I'm blanking. Is that...
Okay.
What did I say last week, though? I don't know.
I do give the...
Yeah, the write it down as bah.
Bah, okay.
Like B-A-H.
Bah. Bah. Okay, bah. Got it. And then, Gary, just a very yucky earth tone color.
Yucky earth tone color, like mustard yellow.
Mustard yellow. Oh,
good choice.
Wow. I don't think you have any idea how perfect that fits in there.
Good, good.
Wow. Okay, there's a lot of clues this week. There are 15 clues this week.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a long one.
Yeah. The NFC South can't be that good because last year it was won by a bunch of old rickety dogs. Unfortunately for all of us, the Buccaneers winning means we can't have any tomatoes because Tom Brady is right about everything. It's been a strange offseason to see football's greatest player turn from a boring pigeon into a braggadocious doofus. Below, Tampa Bay are the Saints, a team that always seems to be good enough to win the Super Bowl, but always ends up in the s'mores. sorry, I just thought that was funny. quarterback Drew Brees has retired, destined for life as an old applesauce in the broadcast booth.
Prune would have been great there. Sorry to let the group down.
No, really, no, it was the no teeth. You can't eat a prune if you have no teeth.
Yeah, no, that was still funny though. Jameis Winston or human blender with blades Taysom Hill will be his replacement. In Atlanta, the Falcons have a chance to make a sexy hire to replace Dan Quinn, who brought the team to a Super Bowl a few years back, and instead they chose Arthur Smith, who some might say brought all the energy of a light breeze to Atlanta. Julio Jones is gone and Kyle Pitts is here. Pitts is the new kid in town, the cookies and cream man. If Pitts is good, Matt Ryan will be happier than a rooster in a cement mixer.
Amazing.
Meanwhile, in probably last place, we have the Panthers.
Meow.
They'll be quarterbacked this year by fancy-haired quarterback Sam Darnold. Will he be good this year? Bah. Matt Rule used to be thought of as the golden rule. Now it's more like the mustard yellow rule.
Ooh!
So that's how we.
Wow!
That's how we close that one out.
Very good.
That was beautiful prose at the end. Yeah, a couple of those are gonna. I've got a. I don't know. I got to put them on a plaque. Maybe stitch them onto a pillow. Those are some good ones in there.
There were. Yeah.
I don't know if it's maybe because I haven't slept in 3 days, but that was the hardest I've laughed at a Mad Libs yet. I just like. I don't know. Like.
Rooster in a cement mixer was really the height of this thing. I don't think we could top it.
And then calling Drew Brees an old applesauce. I don't know. I just love, like, I think it's even better than prune because it's like, yeah, prune is maybe what you'd want to say, but like, you know, you could just watch him on NBC doing a game and you could see an old person being like, what an old applesauce he is, you know?
Oh, man.
It's great. Good job, everybody.
That was excellent. And we're going to wrap it up. Well, we have our coaches poll order finished, and then we got to get the next business card into our prize for guessing the order of the divisions here. But our predicted order finish, we were unanimous on fourth place and third place as the Panthers in fourth. It was the Falcons in third. You guys both picked the Bucks to win the division. I picked the Saints because I'm sticking with my thing about how, I don't know, the entire... last two rounds of the playoffs were a lie last year, and the Saints should have beaten the Bucks at home, and that's just the way it goes. But Yeah, I don't know. We for once touched on all the quarterback situations here. I don't know. I don't know what else we can possibly do with this division here. We said rooster and a cement mixer, and I think that just about covers it.
The rooster is in the cement mixer here, Gary. Absolutely.
A new metaphor for happiness. Yeah, we're near unanimous on this division, and you know, there have been some changes, but also a lot of things have stayed the same. So, it's not one of the more exciting divisions necessarily.
I mean, who knows? Like, maybe I'm totally wrong about Sam Darnold, right? And like, I think if last year broke a different way for the Panthers, Joe Brady would be a head coach right now, their offensive coordinator. He's very good. He's the guy that got Joe Burrow drafted number one overall in the NFL draft. And so, you know, I think that there could be a lot of things that happen for this team that, you know, maybe we're just not seeing at this point. But the problem is there's just not a lot of evidence. Like, I just don't think, like, you know, the Falcons, for example, I don't know if they can run Arthur Smith's offense right away. I just don't think they can do it exactly the way that they want it. It's going to take them some time. And the Saints and the Buccaneers are just kind of those established things. I will say that picking the Buccaneers to win the division was the most begrudging thing that I've done in this entire exercise. But at the same time, it's like, how are we ever going to pick against this guy again? You know, I just, you know, it just would be silly at this point, you know?
And I would say my wild card is maybe the Falcons, you know, maybe Arthur Smith unlocks something with Matt Ryan and maybe we see, you know, a return to the kind of offense they had when they went to the Super Bowl. And maybe that does add some intrigue to the division. But
I was going to say they built to win now. So maybe they're right. Maybe we're not. All right, Connor, do you have a fourth business card to add in here?
I do. Eagle Crest Vineyards.
Nice.
And nice. Lisa, who is the head there of Eagle Crest Vineyards, describes herself as the ambassador of good vibrations. That's her official business title there. Makers of 100% pure grape Finger Lakes wine for over 140 years. I believe one of the official winemakers of the Catholic Church, oddly.
Okay.
And I went there on my honeymoon, and it was delicious, and it's sort of out of the way. If you're a Finger Lakes person, you kind of have to go a little bit further out, but it's well worth the drive. And go see Lisa. Go drink some Eagle Crest Vineyards wine, and I'm going to send this to a very lucky contestant.
Now, that's a great one. A good wine recommendation, a place in the Finger Lakes to go for some relaxation. That's the best one so far.
To be clear, we're not sending you there. You just
we're
get the
not
business
sending
card.
You there. Just the business card. But you could then, if you choose to do so, seek out this vineyard. Is what I was trying to say.
It's your first step on the way to the Finger Lakes.
It's like we're not even sending them the link to the vineyard. It's like we're sending them a business card in which they have to type in the URL and then go to the website and then decide they want to drive there. But yes, I think you should go there. It's very good.
Listen,
no one said the prizes were good. We just said we were offering prizes if people guess right. And to be honest, while we have received some imaginative guesses and guesses given with a lot of passion, which we love, no one is close yet. So we may not be shipping these out at all. So, you know.
Can also have all the batteries that have died in my recorder during the this process. And this is like a fistful of batteries right there. You can have all these 90% dead batteries.
I still think the MMQB stickers are pretty good, but that's just
me. I love the MMQB stickers. You gave me a handful of MMQB stickers. I'm running out of places to put them in my house. My wife is like, you know, these are our wedding photos. There shouldn't be MMQB stickers on them, but I like the MMQB stickers, you know?
Send the guesses in and remember your clues. Subjective, but practical. And we'll see you guys next week. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom, the one person we know listens to this show every week. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, this is Molly and Matt, and we're the hosts of Grown Up Stuff How to Adult, a podcast from Ruby Studio and iHeart Podcasts.
It's a show dedicated to helping you figure out the trickiest parts of adulting.
Like how to start planning for retirement, creating a healthy skincare routine, understanding when and how much to tip someone, and so much more.
Let's learn about all of it and then some. Listen to Grown Up Stuff How to Adult on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Grown Up Stuff.
Grown Up Stuff.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.